Why does it always fill you up, leaving me empty-handed? That's Bill Murray. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. The Toronto Blue Jays come away empty-handed yesterday. They go 0-for with runners in scoring position. They go 0-for the game when it comes to runs. They lose 2-0. Cody Bradford, unbelievable. I mentioned it when we set up the game yesterday. That guy just does not miss the strike zone very often. He doesn't walk anyone. Well, he went 7 shutout. 5 hits that were kind of scattered. The Jays did press in the 5th. They had runners on 2nd and 3rd with nobody out. Couldn't bring anyone around. Even in the 7th when Bradford was like clearly fatiguing, they got a couple on with 2 outs. Couldn't come through. This is, and this will surprise you to hear, the best hitting team in baseball with 2 outs and runners in scoring position. If that doesn't hammer home after last year's randomness on the negative side, if that doesn't hammer home how sensitive and fluctuating a stat like 2 outs hitting with runners in scoring position is, this year's version of the Jays being the best in baseball should drive that home nicely. Jays lose 2-0. Bowden Francis has another really good start. He goes 6 innings. One, you could say makes one mistake because Adelis Garcia took him deep for a 2-run home run, but it was a sinker that got in on the hands. Like, it's probably a pitch Garcia should have laid off of. I think if it wasn't a ball, it was a borderline one, and that's usually one with that whip back movement that Francis has on his two-seamer is going to get in at your hands and usually saw you off. But Garcia is just, when he's locked in, which he has not been very often this season, but he is able to turn on pitches, and he did that in a big way there. That's the one blip on Bowden Francis's day. He goes 6. He gives up 2 earned, 5 hits and a walk scattered, 6 strikeouts. It's his 7th consecutive quality start. And over that 7-game stretch, he has a 1.47 ERA and a 0.47 whip, which is walks and hits per innings pitch. Although I should point out that hit by pitch doesn't count in that stat, and Bowden has been racking up the HBPs a little bit as well. The Texas Rangers also couldn't get anything done with runners in scoring position. The two teams combined to go 0-for-11 with runners in scoring position and leave 10 men on base. It was very, very different from the game that those two teams played in the first game of this series, which was 13-8 and involved everything happening with runners in scoring position, including errors. So they'll settle it today, although the Rangers have obviously won the series already. They will wrap things up. Kevin Gausman against Kumar Rocker at 2:35 this afternoon. We will set you up for that throughout the show. We'll talk to Levi Weaver of The Athletic, who is Texas-based, but will whip around all of baseball. We're going to have Eric Kratz on at 10:30. He of Foul Territory, of course, former Blue Jay, former major league player in a lot of spots. We'll talk to Brendan Kuhn of Jays Nation as well. And Julia Kreutz of MLB.com is going to join us in a minute. We'll also do some text line today. I've been slipping on the text line because there's just hasn't been a ton of Jays stuff to talk about. So text us to 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply, but we will get to those throughout the show. We'll try to sprinkle a few in every segment. Text away. What are you looking for these last couple weeks? Who's impressed you most? What's front of mind for you for the offseason? Whatever's on your mind. Elsewhere in baseball, Shohei got stolen base number 49, so he is at 48-49. More relevant to the playoff race, the Tigers completed a sweep of the Royals, so they are now half a game back of the Twins and only a game and a half back of Kansas City. Their playoff odds have climbed up to 37%, a little lower than maybe you'd expect because they don't own tiebreakers. So really, they're half a game back, but they have to jump the extra game since there's no tiebreaker game on the final day of the season anymore. Over in the NL, the Mets and Diamondbacks remain 2 up on the Atlanta Braves for the final spot. The Brewers clinched the NL Central yesterday. Nice little thing where they had non-alcoholic beer in a baby carriage for Jackson Churio, who is only 20 years old. Had they clinched the division here in Toronto, he could have imbibed, I guess, but as it was, he couldn't. The Yankees also clinched a playoff spot. They haven't clinched the division yet, but they are in the driver's seat unless they get swept by the Orioles at some point. So the Yankees did a little bit of celebrating after as well. Jazz Chisholm was streaming some of it on IG Live. We've got a bit of a tech issue with Julia Kreutz, so she'll join us in a little bit here. Elsewhere in baseball, there's also a very amusing in like the bad way. Angels and White Sox went to 13 innings. Those two teams are in a funny position right now because they both need a couple wins to avoid history. In the White Sox case, to avoid the losing a season of all time in Major League Baseball's, you know, modern era since the Cleveland Spiders in the 1800s, who we don't really count for, I don't know, we draw lines in baseball history because it's been around for 400 years. And the Angels are trying to avoid the worst record in franchise history. So these two teams went to 13 innings yesterday. The White Sox kept going ahead and then blowing it, going ahead and then blowing it. Eventually, Jordan Adams walks it off for the Angels in the bottom of the 13th. And we even got Yoan Moncada finally, after like, after a very long stretch on the 60-day IL and no talk of when he's going to come back, and then a rehab assignment that was longer than it needed to be and normally is, then they finally call him up and they don't play him the first couple days. It's obvious that he is not a part of the long-term future for the Chicago White Sox. And then he finally gets into a game last night. They pinch hit him in extra innings and he strikes out with the bases loaded. Those two teams are very, very funny in their own little way. The Jays, less funny, just kind of normal garden variety bad. They lost last night. Let's talk about it with Julia Kreutz of MLB.com. Julia, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you, Blake? You know what? I really love the colorful ways in which you have described the Blue Jays of late. So thank you for that.
Well, thanks. I've had a lot of practice describing this team and figuring out ways to introduce shows. We've only got a couple left, which is, you know, I will miss baseball. But yeah, it'll be nice to not have to come up with those creative ways. Also, honestly, running out of things to say about Bowden Francis a little bit. He just keeps on rolling. Another quality start last night. Yes, the home run to Adelis Garcia, but otherwise another pretty good one. Julia, what are we doing with this? Where are you on Bowden Francis right now? And this becoming pretty like, hey, it's an every start thing now.
It's funny, Blake, because, you know, you kind of expect the guy to maybe dip a little bit or come back to normal numbers or normal performances, and that's just not happening. And then you start to wonder, okay, is this who Bowden Francis really is? Did he figure something else out here that we didn't necessarily expect him to, and now we're seeing the results? Because it's interesting, Blake, when he almost no-hit the Angels, when he almost no-hit the Mets, you kind of look at those games and you see that there were middle pitches there that could have been taken advantage of but weren't. But the fact is that when those pitches happened, it was very rare for you to see another mistake right after that. And that prompted Carlos Mendoza, the Mets manager, to even say post-game, this is a guy that has, about Francis, that is, this is a guy that has a tremendous feel for pitching. You can see that he's very cerebral when he's pitching, and that is why he's having the success that he has. And Mendoza also said that something along the lines of, it's nothing too overpowering, but he is keeping you guessing over and over again. And that kind of fits the mold a little bit of a Chris Bassett, let's say, who is obviously, you know, a teacher and a mentor for Francis with this Blue Jays team. And we know that they have a pretty special relationship as well. So it's not necessarily about blowing past hitters. It's the fact that Francis has, with obviously the help of his catcher, let's not forget about that, figured out what it is that works for him and how to keep hitters off balance when he's on the mound. And that is what we're seeing, you know, every 5 days right now. And what the Blue Jays do with regards to Francis, does he stick around and is he a member of the rotation next year? Or does he maybe become someone that the Blue Jays explore a trade for to sort of supplement the other areas of need for this team? I think it's going to be a pretty interesting story to follow this offseason.
Definitely. And there is, you know, there's a reason teams always say you can't have too much pitching. And for a Blue Jays team that's very expensive elsewhere, having a guy making the minimum and able to give you that is pretty valuable. But there would be, you know, any smaller market team or any team that's in need of pitching would call on him as well, right? So you're, you know, I know people don't like hearing that they would explore that. And I think they'd rather, you know, go out and use your money to sign a guy and keep Bowden Francis. But if that doesn't materialize, the free agent market gets thin really, really quick. We saw that last winter, and you're going to have to explore things. So that's a helpful option to have. And you mentioned speaking to Mendoza from the Mets after that one. First of all, how do you just keep getting on opposing team locker room duty every time Bowden Francis throws a no-hit bid? And how nice was it to have the Mets say, including Francisco Lindor, nice things about Bowden Francis instead of giving Chris Bassett meme material like Taylor Ward?
Oh my goodness. Yes. It's, you know, it started happening again. And I just looked at Keegan Mathison in the press box and I said, okay, here we go again. You know, it's kind of, I said, okay, I don't want to have to write the same story. So let's see what else happens here. And when obviously Lindor, who is a National League MVP candidate, and I would say he's making things interesting. Obviously Shohei Ohtani is again doing historic things, but Lindor is making the race interesting at the very least. hitting that home run to break it up in the ninth, and it was 9/11, and so that has significance for the Mets as well. And Lindor was very, very open about that and how special that moment was for him, you know, on that day specifically. And again, it's just the recognition that what Francis is doing right now is really, really impressive. And it's not just Lindor. It was also Sean Manaea, who threw a no-hitter himself a few years ago when he was with the Oakland A's, you know, tipping the cap and later on saying, yeah, he deserves it. It is hard to do. And he carried through it. And, you know, it helps that Francis was right next to Chris Bassitt and Kevin Gausman, and those guys were pumping him up. And then Manaea comes up with the gesture there as well. And it's kind of nice to see, Blake, outside of this city, even outside of this league or this division, that teams are paying recognition as well. Teams are seeing what Francis is doing, and they understand it's not easy to do, and it's not a fluke. It is just perhaps who Francis is from this point forward.
So when it comes to what he's been able to do, so the velocity was down yesterday, for example, and I mentioned off the top, I didn't think the pitch to Adelis Garcia was that bad. Like, I don't think it was a big mistake pitch. Sinker didn't quite get all the way in on the hands. But his velocity's down. His stuff, for lack of a better term, is down a little bit. And we've seen this at times. He's talked about, even after that Mets game, yeah, I was really fatigued. I didn't feel like I had anything other than locating my fastball on that one. Obviously, if he was coming out here, striking out 15 every time, the splitter was getting whiffs all over the place, we'd be really, really excited about that. In terms of projecting Bowden Francis forward as a full-time starter, how helpful are these instances where he maybe doesn't have his best stuff and he's still been able to give them six good innings? Like, this to me is like when Alek Manoah had his really good season a couple years ago, there were days where like, oh, the slider's not biting, I can't locate. Well, here's six innings of I allowed three runs and it's not great, but it kept us in the game. That to me says something. Is that a good sign for you as well?
Yeah, I think so. And it goes back to just the mentality, working with your catcher, knowing what it is that's working, and really focusing on locating. When you don't have your best stuff, that's when location becomes even more important. You can't really chase velocity and just spray your fastball all over the place. And, you know, staying sort of in the moment and staying connected to the plan is the most important thing. And it's, again, kind of reminiscent of Bassitt, right? Okay, what is it that's working for me today? And how can I make sure that I'm making the most of that, even if my velocity is not in the right place for where it should be, or things of the sort. Now, if Francis is saying things like, okay, I'm a little fatigued, I don't think that my stuff is all the way there, then maybe the Blue Jays can consider stepping off the gas a little bit. Maybe if he's throwing five or six no-hit innings, let's just leave it at that, because obviously all of this matters beyond this year as well. And the most important thing is that he stays healthy. And we have seen, especially this season, Blake, how valuable just staying healthy is. I think you can see that the Blue Jays are in a little bit of an injury kick on the offensive side of things, but we saw pitching injuries sort of derail the seasons of many, many tremendously good pitchers here. So it's a tough balance, but you can kind of see, obviously, a future for Francis, regardless of where his velocity is or where the stuff is, if he can continue to do this.
Yeah, sneaky is the word he used to Keegan Mathison about his fastball, even when the velocity's not there. And he's like a big dude with a large frame. Like, he's hit 95 before. It wouldn't surprise me if he comes back next year and is able to add a little bit more velocity and hold it later into the season because, you know, he's built to be a starter. And yeah, maybe we could talk about his workload the rest of the week. He's probably only getting one more start. The Jays have 10 games left. It sounds like they'll use a bullpen day or a call up or something like that at least one of those days. So we might only get one more. I'd imagine you will be on Red Sox duty at Rogers Center for his final no-hit bid of the season, the way things have gone. You mentioned his catcher there, Julia. So a little bit surprising last week or early this week to see Brian Servin get DFA'd. Only, not because Brian Servin was, like, he was hitting poorly. He's an org depth catcher. Everyone knows the deal here with guys like him and Tyler Heineman, Nick Raposo, who they claimed off the waiver wire from the Cardinals earlier in the year and has been at AAA. But Bowden Francis did pitch to Alejandro Kirk yesterday. And I use this as a pivot, not to necessarily ask about that, because obviously it was fine. It turned out all right. Yeah. When we look ahead, though, to the work that this team has to do in the offseason, what is like, what is a number of games behind the plate for Alejandro Kirk that this team should be comfortable with? He's obviously carried a pretty big load the last couple weeks since the Danny Jansen trade, and it's been mostly fine. But, you know, is he a 120-game guy? Is that safe? Do they need to aim a little higher than the Heinemann-Servin tier of guy this offseason to support Kirk?
100% they do. I would say that this should be something that the Blue Jays focus on in the offseason, because we all know that Kirk is better when he has a few days away from catching duties, when he can sort of balance out his own workload a little bit more. Now, it's pretty interesting to see the way that he's hitting right now, with the load the way that it is, but the Blue Jays absolutely need to focus on bringing someone that can help him in a more, let's say, full-time, quote-unquote, situation here, because that's just who Kirk is. He's just better when he's not catching every day. And the Blue Jays made a commitment to Alejandro Kirk. They let Gabriel Moreno go. They traded Danny Jansen instead of extending him. And now Kirk is your guy. So how do you make sure that he's in the best position to succeed moving forward? And that is absolutely bringing in external help at this point, Blake, because you look at the farm system, there doesn't seem to be anyone who's ready and who would be a major league contributor right away. So, yeah, I would say should be an offseason priority for the Blue Jays, one of many.
Yeah, the AAA guys are, I mean, they all have a modicum of interest as like org depth guys. There's Phil Clark who hits well, but he, I think, has only thrown out one base runner all year. Actually, I should note, I didn't say this in the minor league roundup off the top. Peyton Henry returned for the Buffalo Bisons last night. He was the guy who, if anyone remembers, he took a swing off the back of the head and they had to cancel a game earlier in the year. It's been a couple months. He got back out there. So that was really nice to see. You can go to the Bisons website or their social medias to see his comments post-game about how meaningful that was for him making it back. But that is aside the conversation. I just wanted to make mention of that while it was on my mind. So, Julia, the Blue Jays have a lot of work to do in a lot of different areas this offseason, including that backup catcher spot. We found out the other day that Dalton Varsho is undergoing a rotator cuff surgery, and the start, not necessarily of his regular season, but the start of his spring training at least, is in question now with the shoulder thing. How much does that change your accounting of maybe not necessarily what big free agents you target, but the future of a guy like a Loperfido, a Lucas, some of the AAA outfielders, like how relevant is the Varsho situation to you when you're building out what camp looks like next year?
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting one, Blake. I don't think that necessarily it matters so much for hitters as it does for pitchers when you have your spring training delayed by a little bit, but that's obviously, you know, in optimal conditions, and Varsho is coming back from surgery, which is far from optimal, let's put it that way. So it kind of remains to be seen, and there's so much that you won't know until it happens with something like that. We know that he plays a very, very physical brand of baseball. Keegan Mathison once described him as a free safety in a baseball uniform, which is a pretty interesting way to put it, and that's what makes him great for sure. He is the Blue Jays center fielder. I don't think that there's any other way that you can slice it. We kind of saw a little bit of more of Joey Loperfido in that situation before he went down, and it's just not the same. There are certain plays that really make you miss Dalton Varsho and that really highlight, I guess, why the Blue Jays valued him so much and went out and got him in a trade. So he's the Blue Jays center fielder moving forward. Period. And I think the Blue Jays still have a pretty big question mark to answer in one of the corner outfield spots. You're probably looking at a left fielder, and it is going to depend on what Loperfido can do once he's healthy again and coming into camp and things of the sort. But there are some options available in the market should the Blue Jays want to explore that. Again, it's going to be a fascinating conversation, Blake, and it's all about priorities here, because we know that the Blue Jays have quite a few areas that they need to focus on. This is one of those where they can look and say, okay, we have internal options. We could make this work if we wanted to focus elsewhere. But a guy like Loperfido or Nathan Lucas, like you mentioned, they still come with a little bit of a question mark. Mm-hmm. And can they do this for a full season, and can they help a team contend? tough one to answer at the moment, I would say.
Yeah, and this is the hard part of this time of year where we want to find the positives in the way these guys have been playing. Nathan Lucas has come up, and he's looked awesome. Lo Perfetto hasn't necessarily had the results, but the team says a bunch of good things about him. Will Wagner looked good before the knee scope that he needs now. By the way, there's an update on that. He is undergoing a scope on that. Still sounds like he'll be ready for spring training, but an update to the update from earlier in the week. We want to find these positives, and they're important, but we can't overstate them to the level of, like, this is what the roster can look like next year. It is helpful to have these versatile pieces that could play bench roles and things like that, but no one who is going to be able to replace a Dalton Varsho if Varsho misses a month, or add 40 home runs to the middle of the lineup, which they could use. Built a more meaningful bench and AAA depth, and maybe one of those positions that they need to fill can be an internal thing, but bigger shopping to do outside. Julia, outside of Toronto, what are you most interested in right now? I know you do MLB-wide stuff as well, yeah. Particularly on the desk for MLB.com. We don't have any really meaningful Jays series left. How locked in are you on the wild card races? What teams are you most fascinated by right now?
Honestly, there's one thing that I'm following right now, and that is, you know, following with intent. I mean, obviously, I'm interested in pennant races and things of the sort, but it's Shohei Ohtani. I don't really care who makes the playoffs. It's kind of, you kind of look at what he's doing and just the historic meaning behind this specific guy chasing 50 home runs and 50 stolen bases, and it's like, it is really, really special. So I don't know about you, but this is something that I've been following. It's a guy I've been following pretty much since he came to the States. And I don't know, man. Every time he takes the field, you kind of expect something special. So that is mostly what I'm focusing my energy on right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's enough that, in between Blue Jay Central and the actual game duties yesterday, I sat down with a Landon Knack versus Ryan Weathers start that has no implications for the playoffs really at this point to see if Shohei Ohtani would do so. He stole another base. I also, Tommy Edman and Enrique Hernandez both homered while I was tuned into that before the Jays. So the Dodgers at least provide entertainment. And yeah, one stolen base and two home runs away for Shohei Ohtani here. So lock in, Julia.
Oh, man. It's going to be awesome. I'm not a better myself, but you have to imagine that that's a pretty popular one right now.
Yeah, 4:40 p.m. today, by the way. The Dodgers back in action against the Marlins. Jays, of course, at 2:35. Julia, thank you so much for taking the time out. I will see you at the park next week.
Much appreciated, Blake. Have a good one.
Julia Kreutz of MLB.com. Make sure you're following all of her great stuff. The Jays will close out the season at home next week. I think I've got at least one game left. I'm there Tuesday. I know the PR people are pushing the Looney Dog record. I don't have those numbers in front of me. But fill your disgusting little gullets with hot dogs next Tuesday. Help them get the record. That's the last thing left on the ledger for the season, since it doesn't look like Vlad is going to be able to catch up to Bobby Witt Jr. In the batting title race. Our pal Chris Black, by the way, at Down to Black on Twitter, pointed something out last night that Vlad is 9 for his last 45 over the last 2 weeks. And it's not to be negative about Vlad, but Chris went back and found an at-bat from 2 weeks ago where it looks like maybe a trap thing that Vlad did. He just looked a little uncomfortable on a swing, and he struggled since then. So maybe dealing with something where he's a little bit banged up. Maybe just, you know, fatigue at the end of the year. But either way, Vlad's cooled off a little bit here. He did have a shot to catch Bobby Witt Jr. Would have been close there. A couple other updates. So I mentioned Will Wagner is undergoing a scope of his knee. So the update yesterday was just that he was out for the season. He was going to get it followed up on. He's going to need a scope. He's going to be down for about a month. But the hope is he'll be ready for the start of spring training. Dalton Varsho, of course, the start of his spring training in question with that rotator cuff surgery ahead. So we'll see. We'll get an update on that. Probably not until the middle of the offseason once he's got a little bit of rehab under him. Bo Bichette was scratched from yesterday's game with a right middle finger contusion. He took a ground ball off the finger pregame. He did go for x-rays. We didn't have results on those after the game, but he is likely out today. And then, yeah, obviously, if there's anything there, Bo Bichette might have only gotten back into one game. Which is feels unfair. The other move yesterday, it didn't matter in the game. We didn't see him come in. But Dylan Tate was called up from AAA, and Luis Frias was optioned down. Dylan Tate, of all the names that the Blue Jays have churned in the bullpen this year on the 40-man, Tate is probably the most relevant because over 2021 and 2022, he threw 140 innings of pretty good bullpen work for the Orioles. He had missed most of 2023, all of 2023, other than a couple minor league appearances due to injury, and then had been not even that ineffective for Baltimore. He had a 4.50 ERA, which in this Jays bullpen would have made him the setup man at some point. He has posted a 1.80 ERA, one earned run over five innings at AAA Buffalo. So he'll get a look here. Again, this is what you kind of have to do when your bullpen's in this spot. None of the guys have clicked to a major degree yet, but Dylan Tate is the one of these guys that they've, of the Burr, Nance, Frias, Yerry Rodriguez, of that class of guy, Tate is the one with the most recent track record of meaningful success. So it'd be interesting to get a look at him at least. AAA season rolled on. I mentioned Peyton Henry got back into a game. That was really, really nice to see. Easton Lucas threw five innings of one run ball. He's another guy that they picked up on the DFA waiver wire churn. He has allowed just one earned run over nine innings in two starts. He was originally coming out of the bullpen as kind of a opener slash bulk guy. Would not be surprised, given Jake Bloss's struggles and Easton Lucas's success, the fact that Lucas is on the 40-man, if Easton Lucas finds his way into one of these spot starts or being an opener or something like that down the stretch here. Let's take a break. When we come back on the other side, we'll talk to Eric Kratz of Foul Territory. We'll talk to Levi Weaver and Brendan Kuhn in the second hour. We'll also answer some of your texts. You could text us to 590-590. Standard message and data rates may apply. But yeah, we'll answer some of your questions. How are you feeling about this team? What are you looking forward to? Et cetera. Et cetera. Anything that's on your mind. I was going to say it's Friday. It's not. It's Thursday. But we will still hear what's on your mind anyway. Let's take a break. Eric Kratz on the other side as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays lose last night. A lot more relevant baseball going on, though. We've got a couple of wild card races that are really, really heating up. The Yankees and Brewers have locked in their playoff spots. The Brewers locking in the NL Central. So a lot going on around baseball, as well as Shohei's chase for 50-50. Let's talk about all of it with Eric Kratz of Foul Territory. He joins us now. Eric, good morning, man. How are we doing?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me on.
What is the hat? What is the hat today? It's a minor league hat, it looks like, from the logo on the front. What do we got?
We got it's actually a Cooperstown Classic. When I played in the Cooperstown Classic.
Nice.
Syracuse Sky Chiefs.
Oh yeah.
Used to be the Jays. Then they got trickily deked out of Syracuse and sent to Vegas, and now they're in their rightful home of Buffalo.
Yeah, Buffalo makes a lot more sense. Makes more sense for the Canadian fans traveling across the border and things like that. Vegas was never got to see a Jays prospect with the 51s there. And you always had to be like grain of salt with any of the stats because of the hitting environment there as well, which was crazy. All right, that's about all the Jays stuff we have to talk about today, Eric. So let's go to some more meaningful stuff here. I know you guys reacted to this live on air yesterday, but I want to talk to you about it as well. Craig Kimbrel got designated for assignment yesterday. What did you make of that? What's gone wrong there with him in Baltimore? That's a guy who you got to think still has something left, but they just ran out of time to figure it out, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, this is a team that's reeling. I think he hadn't pitched for a week the last time he pitched. And then when he finally did pitch, it was in a 4-0 game at the time. So it's like, all right, this is an opportunity to get your feet wet, get yourself back in the groove. And I think guys like that, as much as you're like, well, you gotta save the veteran guys. You can't burn them out. Those guys pitch. Like, their arms know what to do when they're slinging a rock up there, hopefully at 96 to 99. And that brings me to the point where I think he's down. He's down a tick from where he even was last year. And so if you're, you know, those are two breaking balls that got hit right there. If you're not able to rear back and say, you can't hit my fastball, then Craig Kimbrel has to reinvent himself. And the spot isn't with the Orioles right now to reinvent him. There's a lot of other guys that are like, whoa, our ceiling is a lot higher than Craig Kimbrel's. we need to figure this out. And they need to figure it out as a team because they are sliding into the playoffs. They're going to make the playoffs, but they are sliding backwards into the playoffs. And I still think he has stuff, something left, but maybe that's the ignorant player in me.
I don't know, because I think there are going to be a lot of teams who will look and be like, hey, if this is inexpensive this offseason to take a chance on Craig Kimbrell figuring it out again, like a guy who's top five and saves all time. The most interesting part to me for the Orioles is that, like, this is a guy who's won a World Series and has 30 games, 30 appearances of playoff experience, that they don't have a lot of that on that roster. How much do you think they weighed that? Like, obviously, you got to perform. But I'd imagine that was part of why they wanted him in there in the first place, a guy in that bullpen who's been through it.
And I think they've gleaned a lot of that information from him. I think that's probably part of this whole DFA part two is the other times he was in the playoffs, in the World Series, his team didn't lean on him. His team kind of went away from him. So if you think about the fact he's struggling now, and then you're going into a time when he's historically struggled, you sit there and you go, all right, I think it's time to get rid of him here. It doesn't mean he's a bad guy. People think like, oh, man, he got DFA'd. He must be a turd. Well, if that's the case, I got DFA'd like 16 times, so I must be a real turd. But that you sit there and you go, they've gleaned everything they can from him. They've asked him, what's it like when you're in the playoffs? What's it like when you're struggling in September? And knowing Craig, the little bit that I do know him, I know he has been nothing but pro about it, and I think he's going to want to play again next year. Now, he won't get $13 million like he did this year, but I also think that'll help him because they gave him $13 million, and then they never went out and got another closer. You can't just bring a guy in who's going to be a seventh or eighth inning guy and say, you're our closer, and expect him to just take off without him being that elite closer. So to me, if he gets like a $2 to $4 million contract and he comes in as a sixth, seventh inning guy, I love it. I love that signing for somebody.
Yeah, especially if, you know, I don't know how much is left in the arm, but like, it's not like he was down from 96 to 89. He was still throwing 94, 95 ish. Yep. Maybe you can get a little bit. I think it's a reasonable buy low, even if he has, you know, I think it's five teams in the last 5 years now for him as he hasn't stuck around. So, with respect to what's left with Baltimore, you made the point there. They didn't go out and get a closer. They have tried Yennier Cano a little bit, Kimbrel a little bit. They went out and got Sir Anthony Dominguez off Philly's scrap heap, and he's been up and down as well. You mentioned that they're kind of limping into the playoffs here. How concerned would you be with Brandon Hyde's bullpen there in a short playoff series?
I mean, I'm the same level of concern as I was on April 1st. I just am afraid. I'm so flabbergasted that a team with so much talent, and I get it. Oriole fans will be like, well, they're not hitting right now either, so it doesn't matter. It's like, they're going to hit. You have an MVP candidate in Gunnar Henderson. You have Adley Rutschman, who is inexplicably struggling. Like, Anthony Santander is a 40 home run guy. You have Cedric Mullins is actually improving after a super slow start. You have possibly rookie of the year, Colton Cowser. Don't worry about your lineup. You have to address the issues. And the thing is, at the trade deadline, let's say you screwed it up in the offseason because you're used to just hoarding all the prospects, like a Canadian hoarding poutine. Like, you just sit there and you go, we're not going to share any of them. Look what happens. We got rid of Corbin Burns, and Joey Ortiz was in the rookie of the year voting, and DL Hall is a great pitcher. I know he was hurt, but all stuff. They had an opportunity to get Tanner Scott, Carlos Estevez, Lucas Ersig, all guys that could lock down your ninth inning because they're locking down other teams' ninth innings that are in the playoffs, and they didn't do it. Shame on Mike Elias.
Yeah, it's a tough one, and it's not as if relievers cost you a ton in prospects, right? It's like, yeah, if you want to go out and add an ace at the deadline, that's going to cost you prospects. Those names you just mentioned, the Padres rebuilt their bullpen on the fly. They went out and got like four guys, and they didn't have to send significant prospect capital out. So I'm with you. It seems like something that might come back to bite them, especially they take one injury in the starting rotation in Grayson Rodriguez, and suddenly that doesn't look as good now too, and it could be a squandered year there. On the other side of that division, the Yankees locked in a playoff spot yesterday. Haven't locked the division up yet, but unless the Orioles sweep them, the Yankees probably have that division. You made the playoffs a couple times. What is last night like post game? Like we saw some clips of like Jazz Chisholm was like streaming it live on Instagram or whatever. Maybe you guys weren't doing that in 2014 with the Royals, but how fun is a night like that, a clinch night?
The best thing I ever heard, my first time I ever clinched was in 2000 in the big leagues, was in 2011 with the Phillies. And we clinched in like August 18th. And some guys weren't celebrating because it was the fifth division that they had won. They were like, I'm focused on winning the World Series. We had won 102 games that year. I get it. I understood what they said, but a veteran told me, he said, celebrate, like play like you're always going to win the World Series. Celebrate like this is the last time you'll ever celebrate. So to me, some people are getting on social media and like, oh, you know, act like you've been there before. Boo, the Yankees, all this stuff. That may be the only time some guys ever celebrate. And I tell that story to tell the 2018 Cubs. We were in a lock. We were chasing them for the division when I was with the Brewers. And we caught them. We were ahead of them. They caught us. We slid a little bit. We ended up catching them on the last day, and we played a game 163. We clinched about 7 days before. We clinched a spot in the playoffs, and we went hard. I mean, we went Habs Blue Ribbon hard. Like, we went Canadian hard. We went out and played the next day and won the next day. Then we played game 163, and we found out while we were in Chicago that the Cubs never celebrated their playoff clinching win. So we beat them game 163. Ooh, we ruined that clubhouse. then the Rockies came in and beat them in the one-game playoff in Chicago, and the Rockies ruined that clubhouse. All to say, the Cubs never celebrated. Always celebrate, because you never know, and the season's so freaking long. Go hard all season to celebrate hard at the end of it.
That sounds like a blast. And yeah, I believe we had heard Aaron Judge was the one who would decide if the Yankees got this. It probably helps that they have like a four-game cushion in the division now too, right? Like if they were tied for the division, maybe that's a lighter thing. But yeah, it's good to see. Did you happen to see that the Brewers got a Jackson Churio non-alcoholic beer because he's still only 20? This is the Canadian advantage, by the way. If Churio was a Blue Jay, he could participate.
He could have. If he was a Blue Jay, there would have been celebrating last year. But hey, you know what? You got to get a non-alcohol. Oh, I didn't even see the whole spread that they got him.
Yeah.
Coors Edge. They got the that is tremendous. I knew they had gotten him some because I was talking to some of the guys on the Brewers, but That's classic. I love it.
You mentioned you talked to a couple guys in the Brewers. What's the feel around that team right now? Because it seems like Pat Murphy, first of all, has done a tremendous job with that group, and they've clinched the division before anyone else. Kind of feels like they don't get brought up that much in terms of teams that could actually make a deeper run here. Obviously, the Phillies and the Dodgers are marquee teams and things like that. The Brewers kind of embrace that. They're like, yeah, sleep on us, and we'll see in the playoffs kind of mentality with that group.
Yes, but I would say it's more of a confidence thing. It's more of when you spend time, and especially in this day and age with social media and Twitter haters and all that stuff, people are like, oh, I'm going to show those guys I made. I'm going to show everybody that didn't pick me or everybody that didn't. Like, that's just so much wasted effort. Like, just go out and play. And that's what these guys do. They believe in every one of the 28 guys that are now on the roster. And we as pundits, we as talking heads are supposed to look at it and go, well, how are they going to win with no starting pitching that really is going to step up? How are they going to win? Well, Tobias Myers has been absolutely filthy, punching out the world. Freddy Peralta's turning it around after a little bit of a lull. But they lost the last two years they were in the playoffs, especially last year. I actually picked them because it was really good money odds. And I was like, I need this. I would love to get plus 3,000 to win the World Series. But I picked them because they had Freddy Peralta, who was a Cy Young vote, got some Cy Young votes at the end of the year, Corbin Burnes, and Brandon Woodruff. Well, 2 days before the playoffs started, Brandon Woodruff is out with a shoulder injury. Now he's had surgery. And so you sit there and you go, okay, well, what is different from this team? Well, they don't have as good a starting pitching. They have the best bullpen ERA in baseball. Does that win you the World Series? You need some length, but their bullpen ERA will carry them past some teams that will overlook them and be like, oh, we're going to beat the Brewers, and then we're going to just go ahead and beat the next team. And all of a sudden, you ain't playing anymore.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's a bullpen where Devin Williams is obviously the headline item, the airbender, and then it's a bunch of guys who have been cast off by other teams. It's pretty fascinating to look at the transactions logs of all those guys. It's like the DFA All-Stars in that bullpen. The other really good bullpen right now is the Cleveland Guardians, where Emmanuel Clase is obviously very good, but they've gotten a bunch of contributions from other guys. We saw Stephen Vogt get pretty choked up the other night after their comeback victory. What is your read on that Guardians team? A Guardians team that's probably going to get a bye through that first round as well.
It's ironic that you talk about these two teams in the same ilk, because they're essentially, the Guardians are the National League, or the American League Brewers, and the Brewers are the American League Guardians. Like, so you specifically asked about the bullpen. Mm-hmm. Both those teams have something in common. They have probably the Rolaids relief, or now it's the Trevor Hoffman and Mariano Rivera award winners in each league. And people are like, well, you can't just have one guy. But one guy that is that dominant as both of those guys, Clase and Devin Williams, are, it makes your bullpen better because it pushes everybody back. This is the depth piece, 100%. It's the depth piece that the Orioles are missing. I think it's a depth piece that the Jays were missing this year. I think it's a depth piece that the Yankees, while they don't have a closer, they have depth. They have a good pen. But think about how much better they would be if they had that elite closer. There's only a few elite closers in the game. I get that. But it's what has set them apart from the other teams. Oh, yeah. And nobody ever talks about the fact that Jose Ramirez is almost 40-40. Like, what the heck? Like, stop. He's not even going to get top three MVP votes because Juan Soto and Aaron Judge are doing what they're doing. And Bobby Witt is winning a multiverse, you know, another multiverse. He's winning an MVP this year. But you sit there and you go, this dude's going 40-40. 40-40. And we're just like, oh, but he's not Shohei. Stop it. Stop. This dude is playing every day at third base. He's the energy. He freaking knocked. He knocked old Anderson out last. Tim Anderson out last year, and the reason he knocked him out was because he was sick of the way that he was treating the rookies. I'm not condoning fighting, but you know what? If you mess with one of my guys, if you mess with my little brother, my little sister, one of my teammates, I'm gonna get after you. Even if I'm the MVP, he had an opportunity to stand up for his teammate, and boy, did he stand up for him.
Yeah, and where's Tim Anderson now? On, like, his fourth franchise since that moment. No disrespect to Tim Anderson, who had a nice couple of years there, but Jose Ramirez, TKO and Judge's decision and every other way you could win that one. And you're right, he's at, what, 35 homers, 39 stolen bases now, 35 doubles, going to be worth 5 or 6 wins if you look at the wins above replacement. It's ridiculous. Easily, got to be easily one of the most underrated guys in baseball. And you know, maybe Cleveland in a playoff run here is an opportunity for more people to appreciate just how good and versatile he is.
100%. And they should. And you look at also, like, who stepped up for this team? People are like, wow, you know, they have this power, you know, all this extra power. Okay, well, who actually stepped up and hit more home runs? Everybody. Did anybody know who hit their 30th and 31st home run last night? In their two runs that they scored in regulation, then they went into overtime and they got their three spot with the zombie runner on second. Josh Naylor hit two homers off of a pitcher who could not lose last night. He should have had a shutout. Bailey Ober should have had a shutout. He had like 11 or 12 punchies, and Josh Naylor has really stepped up and been a very unsung hero. He might get one or two MVP votes because of what he's done. And he kills lefties, too, so you can't just beat this team one way.
Yeah, and pretty big X factor come playoff time. It's funny, I was doing a Blue Jay Central, our pregame show, hit on Cade Smith last night and talking about, because he's Canadian, so highlighting a Canadian guy. And as I was taping it, Josh Naylor went yard. And they've got Josh Naylor, Bo Naylor, Cade Smith, Eric Sabrowski, all Canadians on their team. They just load up on them right across the Great Lakes there. It's a lot of fun. Okay, so staying in that division and geographically close by, the Tigers have almost caught the Twins for this final wildcard spot. AJ Hinch with a great quote last night, like, it's pedal to the floor with the bullpen. Tyler Holton, don't care if he's pushing toward 100 innings. Jason Foley, whatever. What have you made of this Tigers run? Do you think they can pull it off against this Twins group?
So I said, let's see, this Thursday. So I said on Monday, let's relax. It's not going to happen. Now it's so close. I got to continue to say it's not going to happen, because it's so rare that a team goes 9-1, 8-2. It's even more rare that a playoff team goes 2-8, 3-7. Like, it's tough to do what the Twins are doing, but the Twins are playing the Guardians. Like, that's a tough series. Like, you gave away some games. There's no, you had a lead in two of those three games and you lost. You lost. Like, that is tough. We had AJ Hinch on yesterday on the show, and I can't explain to people, because he was my manager when I was in Houston, what kind of ability he has to connect. You saw Stephen Vogt get emotional. That guy is able to connect to his players. Just because AJ Hinch didn't cry in front of the camera, it doesn't mean he's not connecting with his players. He has gone to Tyler Holton, and said, you know what? I'm probably going to need to run you 90 to 100 innings this year because you're doing so well for us. And that pitcher could sit there and say, I can't go. And AJ will be like, okay, that's fine. Like, he'll listen. But when a manager comes up to you and you're not an established player, like, there's very few established players on that team. If you're not an established player and he gives you a vote of confidence, there is no greater, like, I didn't need any confidence. I was ignorantly confident in my career. But when a manager was like, hey, you're our guy. You're our guy for these next three games. Like, you're like, yeah, like, let's go. I know this is. And you look across the team, you look across the bullpen and what they're doing. They have Matt Vierling. Matt Vierling is hitting third for this team. He was kind of like a throw-in, kind of like a utility guy that they threw in the Gregory Soto trade 2 years ago. And he's been able to step up. I think he's got 15, 16 pumps. Like, this team is fun to watch. This team should have been here all year. And they were actually, until this last month, since the trade deadline, basically, since the beginning of August, this is the team, this is how they should have been playing. They were, to me, they've been disappointing, because I talked to AJ about what their pitching depth was when he got the job years ago, and it's been disappointing. And you saw a step back from Spencer Torkelson, who had 30 pumps last year, spent most of the season in AAA. Now there's guys that are stepping up, and they're all young guys, and they are having a blast.
It looks like a lot of fun. And yeah, it's you mentioned that the Twins have the Guardians. They've got the Orioles, but the Orioles aren't playing that well. And then they close with the Rays and three against the White Sox. Like, if that comes down to the final weekend, you've got the White Sox, who are about to set the record for most losses in a season. It's a lot of, I know the Tigers don't have the tiebreaker, so they got to win it outright, but it's right there, man. Hey, do you miss you played in a game 163. Do you miss that element? If this had ended in a tie, we should one off it.
100%. And AJ, my co-host on the show, AJ Przinski, he's played in two of them. He won one and lost one. He said he would never get rid of that. He said it is awesome, because all I have is positive from it. We won, and we celebrated. It was a 3-1 game, like, in Chicago. To me, that's where it should go. It should go. If you don't win it outright, you use your off day, you go play, sorry. You got to grind it out. It is 163. Oh, man. And that year, most people don't remember, the Rockies played the Dodgers for 163. They ended up being the wild card because they lost to the Dodgers. Dodgers won the division, But man, like that is, to me, that is historic remembrance for me, but historic in baseball. All those 163s, Carlos Gomez running home, you know, Lorenzo Cain line drive back up the middle against Jose Quintana. Like there's so many memories that are seared in my mind, not even just from the games that I played in.
Yeah, they were a ton of fun. I wish we'd get those back. I know I get why with TV planning and all that stuff, but you don't win the spot outright. You should have to take it. I would love to see it. Eric, always love to see you, man. Thank you for taking the time out.
Dude, absolutely. Thanks for having me on. Best baseball show in Canada. Make sure you tell Barker that.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Eric Kratz of Foul Territory. We need that as a soundbite. They always play the Blair and Barker ad right before I'm coming on air. We need that soundbite and lead it in to Blair and Barker. Let's take a break. On the other side, we'll talk a little Texas Rangers. Kumar Rocker is going to start tonight. It will be his second major league start. Obviously a big prospect. The number 3 overall pick a couple years ago. Has had a lot of injury stuff. Came up last week and was electric. The slider is nasty. The fastball is pretty good. The Jays will have some good stuff to deal with. We'll talk to Levi Weaver about that and some of the other playoff races that we didn't get to touch on there with Eric. Levi Weaver next as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays wrap up the series against the Texas Rangers today. 2:35 start down in Arlington. Kumar Rocker will be on the hill. Let's go down to Texas to talk to our pal Levi Weaver of The Athletic, of the Windup newsletter in your inbox every morning. Levi, good morning, man. How are we doing?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. I do want to talk about some Texas Rangers stuff and some baseball stuff in general, more seriously. But your last Windup newsletter, you got to write about a player showing his feet to argue with the umpire. Is that a new one to check off the bingo card in terms of stuff you've had to write about?
Yeah, I had to be really careful there were a lot of jokes that I wanted to make, to be quite honest, that I was like, well, no, the New York Times will frown on most, if not all of these. The closest thing I got to you know, pulling off a joke was I got to call him Shoeless Jose instead of Shoeless Joe. So I really had to tone it down quite a bit. That whole game was wild, right? Like there were so many wild pitches. The game was tied and the Astros took the lead on a wild pitch. And then the Padres took the lead on, or took, tied it up on a wild pitch, or maybe the other way around. There was the Josh Hader came in, he's facing his old team, immediately gets called for a clock violation because the umpire didn't see him disengage with the rubber. And so there's this long delay while they sort that out. He throws a wild pitch, a run scores. The Padres had a runner on third that had really, frankly, two opportunities to score to tie it up in extra innings and couldn't do it. But yeah, in a game of otherwise wild things, that was the one that took the cake. Jose Altuve literally just taking off his shoe and just showing his whole foot to the umpire, which immediately, I guess, you know, that there's the legendary story of the guy who showed the shoe polish on the ball. You're allowed to do that and stay in the game. That will probably go in your favor. You cannot take off your shoe in the middle of a game.
You can't disrobe. No, and man, that game that you're talking about, it wasn't even the weirdest finish in the AL West this week, because last night, no. Julio Rodriguez got picked off at third base trying to avoid a thrown bat. I'd have to imagine, like, there have been bad pickoffs before. There have been some in playoff games for this Toronto Blue Jays team. Never one that I can remember where a guy tries to avoid a bat and then gets thrown out on the base. Obviously, he needed to get back to third a little quicker there. But, man, the Mariners keep being weird.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Like, it's easy to say, you know, in retrospect, obviously, you need to know there's two strikes. He swung at the ball. You know, like you got to keep your head on a swivel. If there's a bat flying at me from Randy or Rosarena, I'm sorry. All of my, like, I'm in survival mode at that point. I'm getting as far out of the line of fire as possible. And it appears that that's what Julio Rodriguez did. But I mean, yeah, the Mariners, like, I just keep going back to the fact that they had a 10-game lead in the division. And to be hanging by a thread, runners at first and third, no outs, extra innings again, and like a golden opportunity to tie that game up and come back and beat the Yankees. And to then go from that to just a runner on first and two outs, and then Justin Turner strikes out. That's the end of the game. It's very Metsian. It really, like, that level of wildness that we've seen in the AL West the last two games, it's like the Mets have chosen to allow the rest of the league to take the lead on weirdness for the last two nights. It was unbelievable to sit there. Like, two nights in a row, like, the baseball season's long.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you know, if you're sitting there watching baseball 200 nights a year, there are just a handful of moments in each season where you can be alone in a room watching a game on television and just make this face like, what just happened? Two in a row, man. You usually maybe get five or six a year. There's been two in a row. And what a wild conclusion to the season we're approaching here.
I thought we were going to get a different kind of weird list last night too. The Angels and White Sox went the 13 innings, and I thought we were headed for a scenario where like the two worst teams just can't win, and that game
refused to win.
That game is still going on today, and it lasts the rest of the season, and that's it. And that's the fate that those two franchises deserve right now.
That is like Dante's Inferno sequel. Like, This is where you get to live in purgatory forever. You know, the Sisyphean task of just playing the other worst team forever and ever. Nobody wants to win. I would have to see a replay of that last play of that game, by the way. I kind of think there was a throw to be made from shortstop. It looked to me like at least make the throw.
Yeah, I mean, it's the game-winning run. You should be making the throw regardless. Yeah. Like, even if there's no chance, like... Right. I don't know. What if the guy trips and falls?
To the backstop, who cares?
Yeah.
Right. The outcome is the same. And just sort of to hold it, like the look of defeat of just like, here we go. Well, I'm used to this outcome. You know, like I hate it. I know, you know, you get to know big league players when you cover a team, and they're humans. And like, baseball players are their own weird breed of humans, but they are humans. And it's tough to see guys just, you know, you go through youth baseball and high school baseball, and for some of them college, you know, some of them signed out of Latin America, like all of them have a journey. There is no baseball player that doesn't have a story of the work that they have put into to reach the big leagues. Like, this is a lifelong dream. There are probably going to be players, and I think about this a lot in the year 2020 also, that there were players for which this happened, like that was their one year in the big leagues. There are probably going to be players that this year as a member of the Chicago White Sox was their only year in the big, like that was the whole experience. You worked your whole life to get to the big leagues, and that's what you got. The worst possible version of that dream.
Yeah. That's I mean, you still got there, you still made it, but like, yeah, Zach DeLoach, I don't know, man. Like, is that it? Like a non-prospecty guy who, you know, gets a cup of coffee at the end of this season as a bench piece. Like, it's possible. It's going to be that. Those are the way the odds works out on hot. Well, I was going to say on 120 lost teams, but we don't have any sample size of teams that lose more games right. than that. So, we don't really know. I should mention, by the way, your colleagues, Bertaroli and Ken Rosenthal, with a really great takedown of Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Chicago White Sox, up at the Athletic, yesterday or today. I read it this morning. So good stuff there. Okay. Back to the more serious teams. I led with Altuve. That Astros team, you know, the Mariners have choked this away, right? Like, they had a 10-game lead. They can't score runs. They're squandering one of the best rotation seasons that we're going to see. And even with all that, they're still only three games out and, like, could have only been two games out if that didn't happen last night. Like, they're still there. But the other component of this has been, since July 1st, the Astros have been the second-best team in the American League other than the Detroit Tigers. So when you look at the playoff field right now, you could say the Astros have been probably the best playoff team in the American League East over the second half of the season, if not longer. What do you make of them heading into the playoffs? Obviously, they have some difficult decisions to make with the rotation getting squeezed a little bit, and they're going to have to play through the wild card series because they just couldn't make up that much ground overall. But you know, performance wise, they look way steadier than any of the other teams in the wild card field.
Yeah, I mean that you're right about the tough decisions in the rotation, and the biggest tough decision is who are your three main guys? And it's obviously, you know, Framber Valdez, great. That's an easy one. Yusei Kikuchi has looked phenomenal. What were the Blue Jays doing with him? His ERA was like 4.75 or something, and then he turned into a Cy Young Award winner when he got into that analytics factory in Houston. He's been great. Is their third guy Ronel Blanco? Is it Hunter Brown? Hunter Brown's been very good in the second half. You know who I'm not mentioning is Justin Verlander, one of the most decorated postseason pitchers in our lifetime. He has not been good enough to be a member of the rotation. So do they pitch Verlander out of the bullpen? Do they leave him off the postseason roster? Like, that's a tough decision for a team.
It is. And like I wonder if the way you split it is you leave him off the wild card roster, but then he's in the rotation for the next round if you get there, which is obviously awkward and it'll look a certain way. Like, if you don't pitch Justin Verlander in the wild card series and you lose the wild card series, people are going to look and be like, this guy has pitched almost 250 playoff innings at like a 3.50 ERA and has won rings, and it's going to look a certain way. But then if you pitch him, you're the team that pitched the old guy with a 5.50-ish ERA when you have a bunch of guys who have outperformed. I think the easy one here is like Spencer Arrighetti probably goes to the bullpen, right? Like that's probably the easiest part of this solution.
Yeah, that seems easy enough for me. But you can't make those decisions based on what it's going to look like. You have to make the decision based on what gives you the best chance to win, and then you stand by the decision. And this happens in baseball all the time. You know, like baseball is such a high variance sport that you are going to make the right decision and get the wrong outcome a lot. It happens in baseball a lot. And so you stand by the decision. You go, here's why I made it. Credit to MLB managers. My goodness, like we go in there after the game and hound them with questions like, why did you make this decision? It really did not go well for you. And they have to calmly go, here's why I made it. This was the decision. I thought it gave us the best chance to win. And then go to sleep that night. If somebody did that to me at the end of every day, like, why did you choose that sentence? That didn't really work out. I wouldn't sleep that night. I would be like, oh, they're so right. I really messed that up. Yeah, I mean, they have to make the decision that gives them the best chance to win. I think that decision is not to have Justin Verlander in the rotation. Frankly, I'm not sure I actually believe what I'm about to say. But, you know, Arrighetti versus Verlander, if they make it to the second round, like, who do you trust more right now? It's probably still Verlander given his track record, but I got to see some more from him throughout the rest of the year to really truly believe what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's tough. And like, I think people who listen to the show every day are probably like, Blake, shut up about Spencer Arrighetti. Cause I find him fascinating. The like the crazy strikeout numbers and the like, you can shut down the best offenses in baseball and the White Sox and Marlins light you up. Like, he's just a bizarre guy to figure out. I wonder if it's too boom or bust for a playoff spot. And they, you know, he also is the kind of guy who like his stuff should translate to the bullpen. Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's I envy them because they're headed to the playoffs and it's better to be making these tough decisions than not making them. The Blue Jays, for example, don't have to decide which three guys to pitch in a wild card series. We don't have to worry about it. So but I don't envy that side of it. At least on the other side, like lineup wise, bullpen wise, nobody likes their bullpen this time of year, really, except for the Guardians and the Brewers, but they look pretty good otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a little baffling. Sometimes something can be surprising and extremely not surprising at the same time. If you'd ask me in mid-May, like just to sit and eavesdrop on this conversation about the Astros being like, well, the bullpen's not great, but otherwise they look solid, I would have been like, how did we get there? Because the Astros were so bad to start the season. Same scenario, except it's me from February. I'd be like, well, yep, that went about like we expected. You know, like it is To answer your original question, yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a team in the American League right now that looks tougher in the postseason than Houston. I will make one small, you know, like if we're looking for the underdog superhero exception, the Detroit Tigers look really good.
And the only team with a better record since July 1st in the American League is the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah. And it hasn't been just like a 2-week hot streak. Like, they've been good for the entire second half. And I love that they're doing it with like some guys, you know, obviously Tarek Skubal. Yes, he's probably going to win the Cy Young Award. But also like the other names that I could literally make up a name from MLB The Show and listeners would be like, I don't recognize that name any more than I recognize the other two-thirds of the rotation. Like, it's wild.
Yeah, like Will Vest is not a real name. Like, Tyler Holton's a real guy, but you could, like, Tyler Holton is also a generic enough name, but there is literally a guy, Will Vest. Like, someone got put on the spot to name a Tigers reliever, and they just picked out something they saw. Like, it's that. Bo Brisky is back there.
Isn't there a guy with the last name of Herter? Like, H-U-R-T-E-R? I'm going to have to.
Yeah, he's not there right now. But okay. He's been spot starting. I guess he's starting this week again because they've been kind of running the four man rotation there. But yeah, they're fun. What do you make of the way this shapes up? Because they have the Orioles this weekend, who are a good team, but the Orioles have not played well for a couple of months here, so bullpen and offense wise. Like, they're averaging like under four runs a game this month. And then on the Twin side, they've got the Guardians this weekend. And then the Tigers finish with Tampa and Chicago. Like, it really is right there, even if we don't expect, you know, the Twins to keep collapsing like this.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to guess, I think we're going to see Orioles and Royals, who just got swept by the Tigers. I think the Twins will be on the outside looking in, which is a real bummer for Twins fans. You know, see them win a playoff series last year, you expect more. I don't know how much of that is to do with the funds that they didn't get from their TV deal that they were supposed to get. Like, that really sucks. We saw that here in Texas too. But yeah, I mean, I think those three teams have shown me the most in the second half, with the Royals also being quite a surprise. You know, they lose over 100 games last year and just, you know, Britt Jarulli had a story this week that the Royals are good for baseball because they're doing something that everybody should be doing, which is trying to win. And they spent, you know, a lot of money by Kansas City standards on free agents. They spent a lot of money by anybody's standards extending Bobby Witt Jr. And they're a whole lot of fun. I would love to see the Tigers just swept them, but I would love to see Tigers versus Royals in the playoffs. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Zooming back out a little bit, do I think any of them are going to knock the Astros out? I don't. I think we're going to see the Astros again in the World Series. And then in the National League, which I know you didn't ask, but I'm excited about them. I really want to see, and I don't even know if the bracket will line up this way. I would love to see Padres versus Brewers in the NLCS. If those two make it to the NLCS, I don't care. Like, I've already won whoever makes it to the World Series. Both of those teams have been a lot of fun for me to watch.
Yeah, and the Padres have, like, they've never at any point been far removed from the wild card race. Like, it's been 2-3 games. But they just feel so much steadier than Arizona, New York, or Atlanta that, like, obviously at this point in season, 10 games left, 2.5 games is an eternity. It's a huge gap. But, like, they've kind of just skated through of, like, oh, the Mets could also catch Arizona. San Diego's felt like the most relevant, or not the most relevant, but the most secure of those teams. And obviously, if the Dodgers weren't the Dodgers, they'd probably be looking at that, you know, in most years they'd be pushing for the division here. I guess it's still only 3.5 games. It's still possible. What do you like the Padres, that rebuilding of the bullpen on the fly? And then obviously they're the Padres. Like, it's such a fascinating year where last year everything went wrong. The run differential was that of like an 87 win team, and they couldn't win, and they lost every one run game. And now it's just completely flipped. Yeah, I mean, I guess they won't get the Brewers. They wouldn't get the Brewers until the NLCS, I don't think. But what do you like about the Padres? Why are they so fascinating to you right now?
I mean, and don't forget, last year, in the year where everything went wrong, they went on a massive hot streak to end the season. Like, they did show that there's hope for the future. But even after that, they traded Juan Soto. They've got, you know, it's new manager. Like, everything did not appear to be lined up to be great. What I like about them is that they have just been very clutch and very fun to watch. I've been watching them more lately as we start to get towards the playoffs. I feel like I haven't watched enough Padres games. I need to watch them more. And it feels like every other night, Manny Machado is hitting a go-ahead home run. Jurickson Profar has been nails.
Crazy.
And then their pitching staff is very good. There are some control issues maybe, and those can be, we've got a story today about, ranking the pitching staff. So, and it was Steven Nesbitt, and now I feel bad. I think it was Chad Jennings. And their only knock really on San Diego was that, control issues can be magnified in the playoffs. And that's true, but man, they've got a great bullpen and just, beyond the normal, I guess, quantitative, statistical analysis or analytical analysis. They're just so much fun. And it just seems like they are already like in the atmosphere watching those games feels very much like a team of destiny. If I can steal a phrase from Craig Goldstein. And I'm not 100% sure they're not going to catch the Dodgers. And look, the Dodgers are scoring runs like crazy the last week or so. But their rotation is in shambles and people keep getting hurt. So do I trust that Yoshinobu Yamamoto is going to stay healthy for the rest of the year? I don't. Do I trust that any Dodgers starter is going to stay healthy for the rest of the year? I don't. And so, it's like the smallest division lead right now in the NL West, which I expected to be the largest. I expected the Dodgers to clinch first. I'm not entirely sure the Padres aren't going to catch them. They just got that head of steam. They've got that confidence that you see in a team that comes out every night and thinks, how are we going to win tonight?
And I mean, Yu Darvish looks incredible again now, at least the last start. Michael King's been really good. Luis Arraez just went like 6 weeks without striking out. There's a lot clicking there. It's a lot of fun. It's gonna be fun to see them. I definitely think whoever grabs those last two NL wildcard spots, they're in deeper than, it's best two out of three, so lots can happen. But, like, the Padres look like the best of those three teams pretty safely there. Okay, want to go back to less relevant baseball teams just because I know you are Texas-based. You've been around this Rangers team. We're going to see Kumar Rocker start this afternoon against the Blue Jays, his second major league start. What did you see from him last time? Where's your excitement level in terms of, a more – obviously, this is a guy who just, like, has not pitched a lot since being drafted, so we don't know a ton about him. But the early returns were that he's nasty.
Yeah, he has been, and extremely nasty in the minor leagues. They called him up. I think it was honestly kind of a smart decision to have him debut against the Mariners because, it's the confidence of, hey, this is the team that's ahead of us in the standings. We're not giving you a light assignment. However, you look at the Mariners offense, that's a pretty good one to debut against. But yeah, he looked absolutely nasty, and his breaking pitch, which he calls a slider, and I think that I heard this right, that members of the Rangers pitching development department call it a curveball, so there's some disagreement as to which pitch it actually is. But he got a lot of swing and miss on it, and it is, I think there is an excitement around the Rangers fandom because it's been a while since they developed like an actual top of the rotation starting pitcher. And, no disrespect to Derek Holland, who had that very good World Series game. And, that one stretch at the end of 2014, where he looked like an ace for a month. No disrespect to Martin Perez, who was a very serviceable starting pitcher for them for a long time. But there has just been pitching prospect after pitching prospect that has gotten hurt, who hasn't panned out, who wasn't who they thought he was. It's been since like Kevin Brown in the late 80s, early 90s, since the Rangers have developed a true, like, this guy is an ace and he's ours and he came up through the system. I can't even count Yu Darvish because he had already been a professional in Japan, so that doesn't count. There is some hope that this is going to be like the chosen one. That is a kiss of death for Rangers prospects. Jurickson Profar, that was his nickname for a while, was the chosen one. He never panned out in Texas. So, but passed the eye test, looked very good against the Mariners. I think the Blue Jays, again, no offense to the Blue Jays, are probably a good second assignment. They have not been killers necessarily, but there are some bats in that lineup. They're like, all right, let's see how you do against Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Let's give you a chance to face the best and see how that pans out. So I am going to be watching very closely just to I want to see how it goes.
Yeah, and the Jays quietly over the last since the All-Star break, actually second best weighted runs created plus against right-handed pitching because they're so lefty heavy now. Now Will Wagner and Dalton Varsho just hit the IL. So who knows? Maybe that doesn't sustain, but they've been quietly. They're also, this is a stat that I think will drive Jays fans crazy. They're the best team in baseball hitting with two outs and runners in scoring position. They have not hit at all season. They went a month without scoring in the first inning. They haven't had like any home runs from the cleanup spot, but two outs, runners in scoring position. This team's a wagon. Don't understand it whatsoever, man. It's been an odd year and a long year.
This is the like, the best and worst part of doing, you know, being somebody who has to kind of keep an eye on the whole league and then talking to somebody with that pays very close attention is that I feel stupid for not knowing that, but I love, you know, getting that information from you and go, oh my gosh, I got to dig in further to this. Why are they doing that? And it's, you know, it's probably unquantifiable, but that is remarkable.
And last year, like the story in August was they were on pace to be the worst hitting team, the worst hitting playoff team with runners in scoring position ever. And that normalized a little bit by the time the playoffs rolled around. But like the situational hitting stuff, you can't convince me it's not either random or it specifically plays out to just needle teams and fan bases. That just doesn't make a lot of sense. Levi,
it's like the string theory. Like it's out there, but we just can't prove it. Maybe yes. Is where we're going with that.
Yeah.
But,
something yeah. Sorry, is
you
happening.
You were signing off and here I am talking about string theory. Yes. You know?
I'm happy to, we just got a guest on the other side as well. So I got to let you go. Levi, thanks so much. And we will DM about string theory afterward.
Okay. All right. Good to talk to you, man. Take care.
Levi Weaver of The Athletic. It's the Wind-Up newsletter. You can subscribe to and get it in your inbox every morning. This morning's version, taking a look at the teams that have already clinched, the Milwaukee Brewers in the NL Central, the New York Yankees in a playoff spot, not necessarily the AL East just yet. And yeah, it's clinching season. There's a lot of good scoreboard watching and flipping around, that's why it's helpful to have a 2:35 start today, because you can take in some of the later afternoon and evening games as well, including the Dodgers at 4:30 or 4:40 as Shohei continues the trek toward 50-50 and things like that. The Mariners had a funny one last night. Let's go to Seattle, or let's go to the Pacific Northwest with our next guest. We'll talk to Brennan Kuhn of Jays Nation. We'll answer some texts as well as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkin Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays back in action, 2:35. Kumar Rocker against Kevin Gausman, who's been pitching pretty well of late. Nice uptick in velocity last time out. Bowden Francis pitched pretty well last night. Once again, 7 quality starts in a row. Let's talk about it. Let's talk to Brennan Kuhn of Jays Nation. BK, what's up, man? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Blake. Good to be with you.
You too. Okay, so we're going to talk some Jays stuff, but you're a Pacific Northwest guy. That Mariners ending last night, Julio Rodriguez dives out of the way or runs out of the way of the thrown bat, gets picked off at third base, and then that's basically the last opportunity there. I know you're a Jays guy first, but this Mariner season, the squandering of the job that rotation's done, the finding ways to blow a 10-game division lead and blow games down the stretch, where does that rank in terms of frustrating seasons to watch closely for a team? I know the Jays have had some frustrating ones too, but this is a Mariners team that by all rights really should have won that division.
I have a lot of buddies who are Mariners fans, so I've been able to experience them this all through their eyes. And yeah, it has been a weird grind of a year for the Mariners. They've pretty much stuck to a formula the last number of years where they start slow and then they inexplicably get super hot in summer and they have a run differential that is far worse than their record. And they were just this team that kept getting lucky for a few years, maybe not always making the playoffs, but you know, having a record above their talent level. And then this year they have this incredible rotation and just everything that could go wrong on the offensive side of things has gone wrong. And then two massive base running blunders back-to-back days against the Yankees. In pretty critical situations for both of them. So Yeah, it's been a weird year for Mariners fans. I both kind of root for them, and then I kind of get to chuckle and poke and prod my buddies who are fans of that team. But yeah, I thought this was going to be a big Mariner year. I thought they had a rotation that could take them to the World Series, and it has all burned down really quickly.
Squandering an historical season from your starting rotation. I have no idea what that's like. No idea what that would look like on the Toronto Blue Jays side. Side at all. Okay, let's talk about this Blue Jays team. Man, first of all, I think you retweeted this as well, or it's been making the rounds, and I mentioned it on air a couple times. The fact that this is the best hitting team with two outs and runners in scoring position in baseball, like, that has to just be like baseball gods just jabbing at Blue Jays fans, right? Like especially after last year with how things went with runners in scoring position until September, it doesn't make any sense. It feels like it's just we're being teased a little bit.
Yeah, it really falls into the how random is the sport category, right? Because in one particular season, there will be outliers all over the place for each team. Like, every team has weird outliers. And when you're living that outlier, you tend to wonder what is wrong with the team to create that. And the more seasons that go by, just like, this sport is so random. And there is so much volatility to good performance versus bad performance. And obviously this Blue Jays team just straight up isn't good enough. And there's many reasons for that. But then, you know, to have something go so well, which, you know, it has been a problem in years past, it's just funny. It's something you can laugh at. And, you know, excited to see what dumb outlier the Jays live up to next year in 2025.
Yeah, well, my early prediction will be that, like, they're an historically bad team against lefties or something like that, because they look so, and most of this will be on the bench side or, like, platoon guys, but they look so lefty heavy right now. We actually have, I didn't intend to go here yet, but there is a listener question from Mr. Baby who asks, how would you fix the lineup against right-handed pitching, or against left-handed pitching, rather?
It is funny to be in a position where we're having this conversation, because the Jays went like a decade without having a worthwhile left-handed bat, yep, like homegrown or anything. So it's nice to be here, but all of a sudden now we're looking at, you know, Tyler O'Neill, Teoscar Hernandez, just names like that, right? So, you know, it, left field and, you know, DH versus lefties is kind of where they have wide open spots for that. Third base possibly too. I don't love the third base crop. I don't think they're going to be in the, you know, Alex Bregman waters. So, if they're not doing that, then yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, big time left field power or bust. So that's something they need to pursue. He's a left-handed hitter, but hey, let's keep talking Juan Soto until the dream dies. And the dream will die, but let's keep talking it until it actually happens.
Yeah, here's the thing with handedness is, if you are beyond a certain level of talent, I don't care if you are lefty, right, switch, if you stand right behind the plate and swing your bat forward, I don't care. If you hit like Juan Soto, use whatever. Man, this reminds me, by the way, Ozzie Albies is going to get activated this weekend, and he's now no longer a switch hitter because his wrist still hurts when he hits left-handed. Ridiculous. That's the type of it's such a cool baseball story if he has any meaningful moment in the playoffs doing that. It's not what I intended to ask you about. So you mentioned, you know, we're talking a little bit about offseason targets and offseason needs, and a couple months ago you would have looked at where the Blue Jays are at, the fact that I think 11 or 12 pitchers in the organization underwent some sort of UCL procedure this year, including Alek Manoah, who was obviously penciled in the rotation, Ricky Tiedemann, who was one of the next men up, Chad Dallas, who was like a down ballot candidate for, like, could he spot start in 2025? A lot of guys aren't there, but Bowden Francis emerges and has another good one last night. Where are you on Bowden Francis after this 7-start stretch? Is 7 starts, given, you know, what we knew about him before, is that enough of a runway for you to start thinking differently about where the priorities are and where the money needs to go in the offseason?
Well, yeah, I mean, the conversation of budget isn't the fun one with fans, but ultimately the front office is going to go into the offseason with a rough outline of how much money they have to spend. And in a free agent marketplace where number 5 starters cost $12 million, you know, if you look at like Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, and you'd probably view those guys as 4, probably 5s last offseason, that's the kind of money they're getting. Yusei Kikuchi, you know, he was $12 million AAV. So and that's when you didn't know what you were getting back, you know, way back when he was kind of weird coming from Seattle, and obviously weird year one in Toronto. So To be able to have a rotation spot filled at league minimum salary is huge for the Blue Jays because they can allocate resources elsewhere. And, you know, as we just talked about, the need for thump in the lineup and right-handed power, they're going to need to spend to get that. And with a bullpen that needs spending too, the more money that they can allocate those places that doesn't have to be attached to a rotation goes an awful long way. I don't know what the Jays should ultimately do as far as adding a free agent starter because, you know, we like what we've seen from Yariel, but it's hard to project that out over an entire season and you know, the health and performance and all that, how he'd hold up. But the fact that you right now have five guys who at least you feel like, okay, these guys can be rotation arms, it lets you look elsewhere. But it's also very hard to pitch to get to a point of starting pitching depth through free agency. And that's a place where the Jays are going to have to get creative because I don't know how you stash somebody in Buffalo that's worthwhile of a rotation spot, but there's certainly not many healthy arms in the system that are ready to come up and do it homegrown.
Well, no, like Chad Dallas, I don't think will be back next year. Tiedemann would be late if it is. Manoah's late if it is. Even further down, you look, you know, Brandon Barriera, who was a first round pick, he's undergone it. There are a lot of names, and the guys who are interesting, like, I mean, look, I think if you have Jake Bloss and Adam Macko at AAA next year, optionable and things like that, that's a better spot than you were in to start this year. It's not, you know, you're still one injury away from looking at, you know, a bullpen day and things like that. But it's at least there are two guys. And the other thing you could do with this potentially is instead of going out and shopping for, say, a number four type, maybe what you do is you take one tier down and it's the type of guy that could start, but if they lose out on the rotation spot, it then helps address the bullpen. Now, those guys are probably costing you, you know, like what did Michael Lorenzo get? Like $10 million or something like that. Yeah. You probably have to aim even a little lower than that. But a guy who can compete for a spot and hey, if it doesn't work out, here you go, you help out in the bullpen. There aren't a ton of those guys, but given the success of a Ross Stripling in recent years and stuff like that, maybe Bowden Francis lets you aim there instead of paying for a guy who has to have a rotation spot or there's no value whatsoever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it shows what the Jays were dreaming on for so long with Mitch White, right? Like that was the perfect roster fit, a guy not making any money, but who you at least could hope could function as an occasional number five, but then operates as a long man out of the pen. And obviously that didn't work out. And it's a pretty fine line to find somebody who's capable of doing the back and forth thing. And again, a team that's trying to compete is very different from a team that's just kind of playing it out with the young players. So the Jays need a bit of certainty, and they're going to be challenged in the pitching market, both for that swingman depth arm and obviously the high-end bullpen stuff.
Yeah, Mitch White, big strikeout rate in the AAA Milwaukee Brewers affiliate, by the way, which I'll still hold out a glimmer of hope there. Okay,
Tobias Myers, he just fast-tracked the Tobias Myers train to be just get to Milwaukee quick and start figuring it out from there.
Exactly. I mean, if any team's going to figure it out with him, he's it's probably going to be Milwaukee. Okay, so the other, you know, there are going to be trade-offs here. They don't have unlimited money. They got to probably need two bats, need some starting pitching depth, need some bullpen help. Where do you land? And this is something we talked about with at length earlier this week with Ben Nicholson-Smith, because he's pointed out that this front office has shown us historically they don't really believe in spending free agent money on relievers for the most part. It's so volatile. You don't generally get your bang for your buck. But the Jays have so much work to do in the bullpen. And to your point about starting pitching depth in the organization, they haven't even been able to produce the failed starters who then become relievers with any sort of regularity. I know there are a couple interesting names at AA and AAA as far as bullpen guys go. Where do you land on how you fix this bullpen, whether it's internal trade, if you do finally bite the bullet and spend, you know, everyone knows it's not the most efficient way to spend your money, but you need a bullpen.
They don't have a choice, right? Like when you're, you know, this is assuming, you know, the front office is back. I mean, this is a pretty significant make or break year. So when you don't have a choice and you don't have alternatives in the system, you're either trading for, you know, cheaper bullpen arms, or you're signing ones who carry at least a little bit of certainty. I'm not against, or I think I'm in alignment with the strategy that's been taken in years past by the front office, because it is a bit of a fool's game to be spending big in free agency on relief arms. At the same point, eventually you box yourself or put yourself into a corner and you need results. So as much as even the top bullpen arms in free agency don't necessarily guarantee results, the Jays need to spend money there. They don't have a way around it. It is funny to look back at the offseason and last year at the bullpen and look at how many returning names existed. And I mean, foolishly in hindsight, but I love this bullpen. I really liked it. I didn't think it was elite or great, but last year the Blue Jays struck out the third highest number of batters in major leagues out of the bullpen. Like that can quickly be forgotten with a bad year, but the bullpen was really strong last year and you had a little bit of depth to it too. So when you have guys like Romano, Yim Garcia, Meza, Chad Green, Swanson, those are all guys you felt really good about entering this season. And, you know, out of that entire group, I mean, Yim Garcia was the only one you felt great about, and he's a guy you had to trade, and he had lingering injury stuff. So it just shows how quickly a bullpen can implode and how hard it is to, you know, enter a year feeling confident in that group. So basically, it's throwing darts. Spend money, and they're going to have to spend a decent amount, and they're going to have to hope it works out. But man, there's no less certainty than developing a bullpen year to year.
No, they were eighth in bullpen ERA last season, and the top seven guys by innings pitched all returned. So, like, even if you were, and I said this yesterday too, is like if you looked at Romano, Swanson, Garcia, Meza as your seventh, eighth, ninth inning, absolutely reasonable to be like one of these guys will blow up. It's relievers. Yeah. Someone will get hurt, or someone will just be bad. But for all of them, or three of them, I guess, to be like get option to AAA level bad, get DFA level bad, on and off the IL and done for the season, level injured. And then, yeah, Yimmy Garcia was the one guy who was good. And at that point, it didn't matter. It's a lot how quickly it turns over. And I will say that's not to say the front office doesn't get criticism for it, because again, the lack of pitching development in the system has meant there isn't that next man up. They have had 14 or 15 different relievers on the 40 man this year who were not on the 40 man to start the season. And almost none of those guys have turned into, like, the Brewers built an entire bullpen of Devin Williams and DFA guys. You can do it. Have any of these guys popped for you in any way at all? Like the guys that they've turned, they just called up Dylan Tate last night. So, you know, we didn't see him in the game, but pretend, you know, he's a guy who has a track record with Baltimore. Burr, Nance, Little, all these guys. Have any of these guys done enough to play their way into, hey, you have them in pencil somewhere in the bullpen mix for next year?
I don't think there's any number in baseball I look at quicker than a bullpen arm and their K percentage. Because, like, are they getting strikeouts? I think that's all I care about. And Ryan Burr is the only person in this bullpen striking anybody out. So he's got a quietly has a 31.1% K rate, which is pretty decent. Actually would have been good in last year's pen, even a good pen, that would have been a good number. So I think it's reasonable that Ryan Burr could be considered a guy who is very bottom of the bullpen next year. But I mean, that just shows how much the team needs to build, right? Chad Green, there is stuff to like about Chad Green, but he's not striking guys out. That hasn't fully returned, even though the velo is okay. Obviously there's the Romano uncertainty. Eric Swanson's look better. It is interesting because Swanson, I think you and BNS talked about this, but at about, you know, $3 million next year, if he was in another org and had kind of the trajectory of like elite 2022, pretty good 2023, catastrophic 2024, that's the kind of person I'd be saying, like, you know, throw $3 million at him and hope it works out. So I do think Swanson is maybe a guy they end up tendering just so they have one less spot to fill. But ultimately there's a lot of questions, but Ryan Burr being somebody who's optionable still, at the very least, I think he's one guy deserving of holding on to the 40 man spot. Beyond that, I mean, of this, you know, of the group of just kind of trying to find somebody this year, he's the only one who I find interesting.
Yeah. It's a tough spot. The Swanson example is a good one because, like, if we started looking at relievers the Blue Jays should target, you'd look for Swanson types, right? You'd look for guys that had a multi-year track record, had a bad year, and got a little too expensive through the arbitration process. David Bednar's a name I'm going to keep bringing up. He's going to get like $6 million in arbitration for a Pirates team that doesn't spend. You know, I don't think it'll be enough that they non-tender him, but you could probably pick him up in trade so they get out of the $4 or $5 million difference in salary or something like that. Last one on the bullpen for you. What is your comfort level with, hey, the Jays have a lot of left-handed hitting, high-end bench or low-end starter types in the Wagner, Loperfido, Barger kind of group? Not all those guys are going to have a role on the team. Most of them are optionable. It's only Ernie Clemente and Leo Jimenez of that group who don't have options. So you don't necessarily have to come to this, but trading from that group someone who might be the odd man out to address – the bullpen. You lose on value probably in terms of like the raw value of a 5-year controllable position player versus an established reliever. But would you explore that sort of roster move as a way to help the bullpen as well?
I think they have to. I mean, having too many redundancies in the upper levels of the minors, especially in a critical competition year, I mean, they have to do something, right? So you can either have, you know, one of many left-handed hitting outfielders in the minors, or you can turn that into something that's helping the team now. So I see that being the approach. Player-specific-wise, I think Lo Perfido's here to stay because he can play center field. Mm-hmm. And just having somebody around who can, especially now with the Barsho, obviously the surgery he has coming up, you need that cover in center field regardless. I really enjoyed having two center fielders with the Kiermaier-Varsho thing, just not when they're both playing all the time, if they're not hitting. But having Lo Perfido, hoping he can develop and actually be somebody who is worthwhile, you know, receiving a lot of at-bats versus right-handed pitching would be great. But then him being the insurance policy for center field, if and when Varsho is ever missing time or struggling, there's a lot of value in that. So I think he's the guy who stays. I'm an Alan Roden guy. I like Roden a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't know what his fit is in the short term with this team. A guy probably deserving of a call up this September if there wasn't so many guys already on the 40-man roster who are left-handed hitting outfielders. So, you know, Roden, I'm curious how baseball would value his player type. He's, you know, a guy much like Horwitz, a guy who just hits, but it's not elite power. And obviously not high up on prospect rankings and stuff like that, but there's a lot to like with him. So I think between Will Wagner, Roden, I mean, those are guys that they're going to have to look to trade and see what can come from that group.
Yeah, I probably like Roden the best out of all those guys because he can play a capable corner outfield. And, you know, there's not a ton of power there, but there's so much hit tool. Okay, we only have like 3 minutes left. So these are two really quick text line questions for you. We never get text line questions specifically for the guests, so you should feel honored. This one's from Grecian in Toronto. The doc is in. Can you please ask him who his source is and if you've sent your source Juan Soto's Fangraphs page?
No comment, and always. I will share Juan Soto's Fangraphs page with every person I know until the day he signs with another team. So, yeah, it feels great going up against the Yankees and Mets in that bidding war, but hey, let's dare to dream.
Rick from Abbotsford, shout out to Abbotsford and Cade Smith, by the way, just absolutely killer for the Guardians. He Rick asks, what is the price to get Blue Jays in the door for Soto? I mean, we're probably talking like $500 million here at least, right?
Yeah, I mean, just because he's so young. So I think he plays year one at 25, at 26. Sorry, of a free agent deal. So, I mean, you look at, you know, Aaron Judge got an offer of $400 million from the Padres. And that was, I believe, age 30 or age 31. So, I mean, lop in 4 more years of prime if you want to compare him to Aaron Judge. And yeah, I mean, you're well over $500 million and probably have to include an opt-out as well. So, the contract structure of that deal is fascinating. I'm super curious if they go the Shohei route and try and defer some money just so the big number looks even bigger, just for how it presents in the free agent marketplace. But yeah, I mean, hey, let's let's do it. I there's no money that's too much money for Shohei. I enjoyed the or for Soto. I enjoyed the Shohei chase. And at that point, I was all in, didn't matter on the number, and I'd repeat that process with Soto.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there. Brendan, thanks so much for taking the time out, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Blake.
Brendan Kuhn of Jays Nation. Nice to finally get to talk to him on the show instead of just online or at ball games. It is the Jays back in action at 2:35. Kevin Gausman against Kumar Rocker. We talked about Rocker a little bit earlier in the show. If you're not familiar, he did make his MLB debut last week, the first Major League Baseball player to play in the majors of Indian descent, which is really cool. He threw 4 innings, allowed a run, struck out 7. He had very, very good AA and AAA numbers in a small sample because the story with him is he was the number 3 pick in 2022. But because of injuries and things like that, over 2022, 2023, and 2024 so far, and this includes his college, the college portion of his 2022, he has only thrown 102 innings. So that is nothing over the last 3 years, especially if the guy is going to be a starting pitching prospect, which he is. So this is why maybe he slid down prospect list. He was only the number 8 prospect in the Ranger system just a year and a half after being the number 3 overall pick. So fascinating to see where he goes. He's 6'5", big extension down the mound, throws a 97-mile-an-hour fastball and sinker, but it's the slider or curveball, depending on who you ask. But it's the breaking ball that is the big, nasty pitch for him. He'll also sprinkle in a changeup against lefties. Kevin Gausman on the other side has that ERA down to 4.02 on the season. It's at 2.56 over his last seven starts. He hasn't struck a lot of batters out in there, but he's been getting weaker contact. The fastball and splitter on the season have found their way back to being slight positives in terms of run value. The stuff metrics are pretty far down. We'll see how it goes. The Rangers have seen a lot of him over the years, especially Marcus Semien. So we'll see how this one goes. Thank you to Julia Kreutz, to Eric Kratz, to Levi Weaver, and to Brendan Kuhn for joining us today. Thank you to Amit Mann, Austin Mackey, and Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. As usual, apologize if I didn't get to your text in the text line. We will do those tomorrow, so they will get answered at some point. You can fire more away then. Kevin Gausman, Kumar Rocker, 235. We will talk to you at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Blair and Barker have you for post game. Have a great day.